and Doug Christie. Well, another week and another win to talk about. Link, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing wonderful. Hey, Doug, good to talk to you, man.
What's happening, big man?
It's been a long time, brother, but good to have you with the show, man. It's good to see you guys.
Appreciate it, man.
Doing well, guys. Doing well. And can't complain at all.
No, and Doug Lincoln's a big NBA guy. You know, he loves the NBA.
You know what? Link, we were almost mates at the University of Washington. I ended up going, but you know a really good childhood friend of mine, that would be Mario Bailey.
Absolutely. Yes. I know Mario, and the great thing is, Doug, I remember you back in Seattle during our time there, because I remember seeing you play out at Green Lake.
Yes, sir.
And pick up games, and I used to go out there. Of course, you know, when the Sonics were in town, they used to hang out there, so you used to see all you guys, and I love basketball, so I love to be out there trying to shake my big ass and cover one of you smaller guys.
I can't even imagine you posting, Link. I mean, I don't even know how anyone would guard you. I really don't.
In all honesty, I always thought basketball was great for offensive linemen because, you know, rather than trying to reach out and foul guys, you had to learn how to dance with guys, move your hips back and forth. And what better way to do that is try to guard someone who's smaller than you, considerably quicker than you, and just try to cut them off at the basket. Same thing as
love
a quarterback.
Love it. Hey, it's 5:06, time for the 2016 year-end clearance, jacuzziofsacramento.com. All right, Lincoln, I want you, you're on the field doing the sideline for the Raiders Radio Network with Greg and Tom, because I almost came out of my chair. It's fourth and a foot, and Mike McCoy sends the field goal unit on it. And I'm like, you know what? That's got to be the worst decision I have seen this year. I want to know what was going through your mind.
Well, you know, I was a little surprised because I honestly thought the way they were pushing around the defense, especially with Melvin Gordon, the way he was running, that they could easily get the first down. It also shows that he has, conversely, he doesn't have as much confidence in his offense as, say, you know, Jack Del Rio, who went for it on a fourth and two when he should probably kick the field goal, a lot of people said, but he eventually got it, a touchdown, and changed the outcome. So, you know, here's the thing, Grant. When you're a struggling program, there are times where coaches become, you know, that booty hole becomes a little bit tighter, and they don't want to give up. They want to take the sure thing or the higher percentage thing, not the short thing, because obviously it was a fumble snap. But you know, how many times can you ever predict that that's going to happen in professional football? It's the equivalent of a.
Hey, you're 1-3. You got to go for the first down.
I agree. Yeah. Here's the thing. You know, you watch the body language of every San Diego Charger on that offense that walked over to the sideline. I mean, Phillip Rivers gave McCoy the stare down that I could see, you know, was burning a hole from my vantage point on the side of the field. You know, all their big linemen were throwing their helmets, just mad, frustrated. It's the kind of decision and it's the kind of lack, if you know what, the cojones that'll get coaches fired. And I don't think he's going to finish out the year.
I agree with you, Link. Looking at that, I was thinking, you know what, this is because really when you look at it, the Raiders have a chance. They could be 2-3. They could be 1-4. They've come through in a play like what Del Rio did with the two-point conversion. You galvanize your team.
Certainly.
And now you look at McCoy. I mean, he's lost it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, without a doubt. I totally agree with you, Doug. You know, The San Diego Chargers are just, you know, we talk about their losses. It wasn't by a bunch of points. They lost games, and they were leading, I think, up until the Raider game. I think I read a stat where they were leading to the final 2 minutes of the game, and where they lost the games, that's why their record is where they are. With that being said, look, Phillip Rivers, even though he's got two-star offensive players down, was still dangerous, put up a number of yards, can still get it done. They have an offense that can move the ball. Defenses can be a little suspect at times, but it also came through a couple clutch times to keep them in the game. San Diego's record could be a lot different than it is. It just happens to be at this particular point. It is what it is.
Link, I don't want to nitpick here. The one thing that concerns me a little bit is the NFL is becoming.
There should be more than one thing, though, by now. You know this long enough. You know me long enough. There should be more than one thing, but go ahead.
There is, but I mean, you're 4-1. I want to be positive here. But, you know, the NFL has become more of an offensive game, and that means you're going to be in shootouts. And I got to tell you, I just can't count on winning those shootouts all the time. This defense has got to figure out a way to improve.
I'm right there with you. And we talked about this before. I'm right there with you. I mean, defensively, statistically, they were ranked, 27th in the run? Or 27th versus the rush and 32nd versus the pass. Now, I'll go back to our time because people want to reference the last time I was in uniform with this team, you know, how good they can be after 1 month of football. Look, I'll agree with you and say that you can coach a lot more. You can coach a lot more effectively with wins under your belt than losses. But there is a great concern. And I know that even back in my time when we were winning, we were playing, we had a good offense. We had sort of a mid-range defense, if you will, statistically, about the middle range. So the Raiders need to definitely get better versus the run and absolutely get better versus the pass if they have any aspirations of going deep in the playoffs. Now, I say the word deep in the playoffs, Nate, because I think that this team has proved that they can go on the road. They've
right.
beaten Baltimore. They've beaten, you know, they've beaten Tennessee, and they've beaten in New Orleans, and they still got a long way to go. Who knows how it's going to be when it comes down to versus the division. But I still think the Raiders are a wild card capable team. And if you're a wild card team, you're going to have to go on the road and play somebody. That builds confidence, the fact that you've shown that you can win on the road. You can say what you want about the teams, but it is what it is. So I think there's a number of things to be positive about, guys, when it comes to this team. But they're ultimately, I share the same concerns with you, because you can't get into a shootout every week and just hope somebody's going to muff the snap, or somebody's not going to throw a flag, or, you know, someone's not going to be as accurate as they were normally are on that final drive.
Link, that's a great point that you bring up when you say deep into the playoffs, because to your point, you are going to have to go on the road. They have now shown that they can win on the road. The one thing that bodes well, in my opinion, for them is the fact that they are able to put points up on the board. And if you put points up on the board on the road, now you just have to figure out a way to shore up that defense. And where do you start at? I see Sean Smith, he's gotten a couple interceptions now, he's turning around. How do you start that process of tightening things up?
Well, unfortunately, you can only do it off of full speed repetition, Doug, because he says these guys these days, they really don't practice. I mean, they really don't get after it as much as they do. The practices aren't as tough as they once were. And I say that because I honestly think that guys that wear pads need full speed conditioning. And what I mean by full speed conditioning, as an offensive lineman, I had to put on the pads and I had to know what it was like to block Chester McLaughlin coming off full speed in my face. I had to know that. You can't do that in shorts. Okay. You can't duplicate that in shorts. So these guys only have a certain number of practices after 2-a-days. And where it drops off is that when you get into the game and you've got big Melvin Gordon who's coming down a hole and you don't have the proper fitting, you get trucked like Corey James did 2 times in a hole. He ran over. Melvin Gordon ran over you.
Boy.
He got extra yards. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
So, you know, you talk about trying to plug that hole. You talk about trying to get coverage, trying to get everybody healthy. I understand the difficulties that's before these guys. And, again, I'm not trying to be here to be Donnie Downer. I'm just calling it like I see it. It's hard for these guys to get better week from week because they just the practice schedule. Now, so what does that give you? It only gives you game footage. That's the only time that you can get better. So you have to take the scheme. You have to try to implement the scheme. You have to go out there and play. Success or failure, you have to coach from that. That's why I say it's a lot easier to coach from a win than it is a loss, because now you just have to tighten it up. The problem becomes, in the sense for this defense, is that what if the ball doesn't bounce your way? I mean, the offense looks good in the first 3 quarters, and they kind of falter in late in the fourth quarter. That's not necessarily a good feeling, a rewarding feeling, if you guys know what I mean. And then you have to leave it up to the defense that has struggled. It's gone their way over the last couple of games, but I don't know how long that luck lasts. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think what's so important, and when you have the lead in the fourth quarter, you got to be able to run the ball.
Certainly.
And I think with the depth at running back, with all the injuries, you know, I think that's hurt a little bit. I mean, that's does that get better when you get your frontline guys back, or am I making too much out of that?
No, it should get better when you have the whole arsenal at your availability. You know, with Latavius Murray out, he's a big back that provides a little bit of a changeup that, depending on how the game momentum goes, you know, when Washington and Rashard get late in the fourth quarter, because they're smaller guys, they're probably worn down and not running as hard as they said they did well in the first quarter or the second quarter. You know what I mean? So you got to get him back into the fold. He's a changeup. He's a way of giving you another option. More importantly, you have to be – I just don't think the run game is as consistent as it needs to be, because there's not an identity amongst this team in their run offense.
Link,
I'm sorry, Doug. I just wanted to say one more point. Without having a definitive blocking tight end, which Lee Smith is now gone, it's hard for them to get the perimeter, and it's hard for them to run between the tackles. So they've got to change it up every now and then, how they can, you know, stretch guys out and get the run game going.
Yes, staying with the defense. So. You know, they they stole Bruce Irvin from a Seahawk. So, you know, I get that. But
Seattle didn't want him anymore, bud.
I got you. So Ken Norton, Jack Del Rio, that we haven't really heard anything lately about that dynamic. Where does that stand right now?
Well, look, you can imagine that Jack Del Rio is a defensive-minded coach. And I've often said when I've done these things, if you're an owner or you're a head coach and you're putting your faith, your job, your lifestyle in the hands of other people, there's nothing wrong with you wanting to take over every now and then. There's nothing wrong with you wanting to implement your knowledge or what have you. Now, when you say where the dynamic is, the thing we're understanding is that, you know, Norton, up until coming to Raiders, didn't call defensive plays. He's a situational defensive-minded coach. And what I mean by that is if you could imagine you bring in certain personnel, he wants to copy it with his personnel, and then he wants to call a defense on that. Okay. That's why so many teams have run a no-huddle against the Raiders. Because they're not going to let you sub in. You see what I'm saying? Yes. And they're going to keep you in that disadvantage defensive. So he's got to learn how to call plays against that. More of the down and distance, the situation, rather than the personnel. And so I think he's learning how to do that better. More importantly, he's got to learn what he can call, just like anyone else. A good coach is the buildup of his players. If his players can't implement the style and what he's doing, something has to change, obviously. So I think he's still trying to figure out that pattern, who he's got, who can make plays. If you look at his last San Diego game, I was very critical in the air with him because I was saying, you know, it's like our safeties are playing too shallow. Our safeties are more concerned about the run, as they should, because the defense has been gashed. But you're playing as shallow as you are when you have Travis Benjamin and other speedy receivers like San Diego does, and every team usually does. You leave the post route, the seam route, the middle of the field wide open, and you're telling your corners to play one-on-one against that much space. It's almost impossible.
Wow.
The Nation with Lincoln Kennedy. If you want to call, you can do so at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. I like this matchup on Sunday from the Raiders' perspective because it's not a team that you think of as a shootout team. They don't have that prolific offense. I mean, you know, in their last three games, they scored 12 points, 24 points, and 14 points. Okay, so we're not talking about an offense that likes to get up and down the field. They have had a bye. I don't know if that means anything. Jamal Charles, first time he has not been on the injury report. He went full go at practice today. But I like this from the Raiders' link because I just don't see Kansas City having a high-powered offense. In other words, this is a game where I just look at the Raiders. If they don't turn the ball over, they'll just simply outscore Kansas City. I don't see the Chiefs being able to match this team score for score. So, what, you
Boy,
know, preview this
I wish
this
I could
morning.
Be as optimistic as you are about this game.
Well, but look at their offense. Does the Chiefs' offense scare you?
No,
they don't scare anybody.
It never has. It never has. But here's the situation. What bothers me the most about it is – look, when it comes to these two teams, as it does any rivalry, and Doug can mention it because it's the same thing in basketball, you throw the records out the window.
Yep.
We can't stand them. They can't stand us. And there was never a time when I was in uniform that I didn't try to put my foot on their throat. I didn't care what their record was and break their will from the beginning. But it's one of those things where anything goes, and you're absolutely right. There's nothing about this offense that scares me other than the fact that they've got a pass-catching tight end. And in the past, the Raiders have had trouble covering the tight end.
That's a great point.
You know, and there, the other thing is, you know, the fact that they're a good screen team, and the Raiders have had trouble guarding against screens. So there are a number of things that I can point out about this offense that might put a little bit of fear. Not saying you're going to be totally scared, but might put a little bit of fear in your heart. More importantly, I think their defense not necessarily lights out. They've got torched by Pittsburgh, you know, a couple weeks back. The way we approach this and the way you should look at this game is that the Kansas City Chiefs are coming to town off of a bye. They should be pretty much healthy for everybody who's going to play. They should be pretty much healthy. And this is a game that they've already shown when they were down by double digits to San Diego how they could come back and make things interesting. It's not going to be as easy for them in the black hole. There's no doubt about it. But this is a team that can find a way to win. And that's what you should be fearful of.
You know, Link, week one, I'm watching Carr, and he's flying around. He's diving over people, and I'm just going, oh, my goodness. Did anyone physically talk to him and say, look, man, we need you. You can't do that.
I think so, but that's just his personality, Doug. That's how he is. I mean, he's just that. He's that. I wouldn't necessarily say careless or carefree. I mean, he's so pushed on winning.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to be that guy. He wants to be the focal point. He's the Raiders quarterback for the next 10, 12 years. There's no doubt about that. But he wants to be that franchise guy so bad. And look, I credit to one, his overall personality. Mm-hmm. I credit to the fact that his brother has been through this experience and he learned from it in which a way which he could curtail his game. It wasn't like he was right on the heels like Eli and Peyton, you know, were, but he could learn from his brother's mistakes and the shortcomings and the league that benefits him in this position. So I mean, I'm just crazy about the guy. One thing I can say that stands out to me about his game is that overall he takes care of the football. He doesn't put it in a lot of dangerous spots. He doesn't throw a lot of interceptions. He's not really careless with it. So overall, he takes care of the football. And I appreciate that because I think that's really good for an offense.
Boy, and I got to tell you, how much has Michael Crabtree been that guy, that safety valve? I mean, we know how great Amari Cooper is, but yeah. When they need a completion, you throw it up. Crabtree is pretty, you know, he did have a drop the other day, but that's okay. Everyone has drops. This guy is just unbelievable with the difficult catches that he makes.
Papa and Flores have nicknamed him the Claw,
just by
the way he catches the ball, and rightfully so. You know what? We don't use it or don't hear the phrase a lot, but you guys remember the term possession receiver?
Yep.
That's what Crabtree is to me. Now, he's got the speed where he can take off and burn you, but more importantly, he just about catches everything that's thrown his way. High, low, in the ground, whatever it is, he catches everything. So that's why you can give him the Claw nickname. And he has been a tremendous player because he has so turned around his career from San Francisco, who wrote him off, who didn't want to keep him anymore. Most people, you don't want him. He's bad in the locker room. And I've not seen anything, any semblance of the negative reports that I heard coming from the 49ers locker room, 49erville, over there in a Raiders uniform. And so he's turned his career around, got a new contract, playing along with Amari Cooper, giving Derek Carr another weapon to throw to. And believe me, he's clutch. He is definitely clutch.
You know, staying in the receiver core, I'm just enamored by Amari Cooper. This guy, he is polished. I just watch his footwork when he comes out of breaks, the way he goes about his business. Yeah. The dynamic between those two is interesting because I don't know if they're putting two guys on Amari or a guy and a half, but has that helped Crabtree as well?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Sometimes they double Amari, but one of the negatives, the minuses in Amari's game right now, the major one of them is the fact that he does not play well against press coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So when guys are physical with him, if they have the athleticism to be physical with him and can run with him, it kind of takes him out of his game. He's not really used to that. So he's got to learn that. But to answer your question, there have been times we have played people where they have doubled him. They've rolled coverage up to him. They've bracketed him and stuff like that. They've tried to double cover him and taken him out of the frame. And there are times where Derek feels a little forced because I don't know if you know this, Doug, but Derek and Amari are roommates on the road and stuff like that. And they've had a real close relationship over the summer and have gotten noticeably closer because they know they're the future. They certainly expect that. But there are times where Derek, I feel, forces the ball to Amari even if he's not open. Now, case in point, this last week, the long ball that that Derek threw that Amari ran under. Now, he put that ball as probably not as far as he could, but way out in front of him. And it was really little or chance that anybody other than Amari was going to be catching. And Amari caught it on the back part of the ball, which was a great athletic move by both of them. But there are times where Derek forces the ball into compromising positions just to try to get Amari into the game. And that can be, you know, can be counterproductive. But it's good to have a multitude of weapons. Now, as far as the passing game is concerned, the only thing this team is missing is a true pass-catching tight end.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to some phone calls here on The Nation. Grant Napier, Doug Christie, Lincoln Kennedy, and Kenny is with us. Kenny, welcome. You're on The Nation.
Hey, good evening, fellas. I'm on my way into the Sierras, so if I break off, then
okay.
But I'm going to ask you all my questions at once. It's really a question. I got a quick hit, then a comment, based on what Mr. Kennedy just said about Amari Cooper. My question is regarding the defense. When you have an offense as explosive as the Raiders, and you touched on it when you were talking about the defense a moment ago, but I would think that being that they practice against, the defense practices against an explosive offense, that would make them better on the field. I don't quite understand how the offense could be ranked so high statistically and the defense could be ranked so low, considering that they play against each other more than they play against anybody else because of the practice sessions. My other statement is I read something a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a week and a half ago, something like that, to where Rod Woodson was considering coming back to the Raiders to help out with the secondary. And the other one is you mentioned Amari Cooper and one of his perceived weakness about a player that's physical against him. I don't kind of agree with that. And the reason being is because this rookie season, early in the season, when they played Cincinnati, they beat him up pretty good. I think that kind of got into his head a little bit. And when I watch him play on the field, he's more, when he gets off the line, he wants to fight back against the receiver, especially not the receiver, the DB, when they're trying to get physical with him, just to let them know, you can't push me around. And that may take him out of his games a little bit. So I'm about to get into a bad area. If you could comment on those, that would be great.
Yeah, right, Link, well, go ahead.
I'll address the last point. I'm not saying that he's a pushover or he's a wimp. I'm just saying that he has had trouble in the past versus physical corners. And there are times where he still has trouble against physical corners. People maul him at the line. And again, it's a little bit less forgiving than it was a couple of years ago where they were throwing defensive holding now and stuff like that. They're really letting these guys play. There are times where Amari is taken out of his game, knocked off his routes. That's just my observation, but I certainly respect your opinion. Now, when it comes to Rod Woodson is already a defensive assistant coach. He's with the secondaries. He's already coaching uniform. He's with the secondaries. He's helping out. So he's already on the team with the coaches staff. And then the first point, look, practice situation and game situations are two different things. And because you're limited when you go to practice, defenses have their scripts, which they are scouting the team in front of them or they're going to play. Offense has their scripts, which they're scouting the defense and stuff that they're going to play. They very rarely script things against one another. So we're talking about the difference between practice and game speed. It's two entirely different things. So to your point, to think that because the offense is so good, it would make the defense much better, it just doesn't always work that way. One thing is you're not going to have game speed in practice, no matter what you do, even if you do a scrimmage. So it's hard to duplicate that, and these guys tend to take it up another level when it's game speed versus practice.
All right, we'll be right back. Okay. We got to take a break, Doug. We got to take a break, and then we'll continue this conversation. We'll take your phone calls, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Grant Napier, Doug Christie with Lincoln Kennedy. This is The Nation. It is The Nation. I'm Grant Napier with Doug Christie and Lincoln Kennedy. If you want to call, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Before we get to the call, Link, I wanted to ask you, because I went through this in Sacramento for several years, and whenever I was not on the air and when I was out in public, it would be like, I mean, hey, are the Kings moving? Are they moving? Are they moving? Are they moving? Oh, so much so where I didn't even want to leave my house. Do you get hit with that all the time?
Oh yes. Yeah, especially when, like your news director just dropped. I mean, it's you get it all the time because I don't necessarily keep up with everyday, you know, events.
Sure.
Regarding it, and of course, every fan wants to know where their team is going to lie.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to Gary. Gary, you're on The Nation. Go right ahead.
Hey guys, how you doing? And welcome, Doug.
Thank you, sir.
Congrats on the gig, man. Couldn't have a better partner there to learn the biz. So, congrats. Yeah, I had a couple observations and a comment, and obviously wanted to get your guys' opinion. First and foremost, it's exciting to see the maturation of this team, and I think it was evident on the field, and it's that mindset of you're playing to win as opposed to playing not to lose. And you saw that literally play out on the field, and that, I think, is what's transcending this team this year. And then ultimately, it's, you know, having all three facets fit and the right schematics. And I think defensively, I think there could be a couple tweaks. And one being, I think, getting 52 Khalil Mack upright and getting him kind of standing up more like a bandit where he's more of a variable. So therefore, the offenses can't key on him, because what they're doing right now is they're literally just fanning him out and then chipping him off with the fullback or they're just playing away from him. And I think it's a small tweak, but it could make a huge difference on our middle pass rush. And, you know, allowing that quarterback to hold on the ball for approximately 3/8 of a second more, because that's all we need. And the other thing is an adjustment with Smith playing cornerback. I noticed that based on his striation, if he takes a half a step back more, that the minute that that receiver gets out of the block, he'll be able to adjust his stride and he'll be in, you know, in more concert with him. And that's how he's getting beat, besides what you pointed out before, which was the safeties are you know, too shallow. So just wanted to get what you guys thought.
I mean, it makes sense to me. I've never watched Sean's footwork that closely to see what he needs. And of course, it's not necessarily my specialty, the defensive backfield. But I do know this, that the type of defense they're playing, if you do not have enough on that press, that initial bump, if you allow a receiver to have free release off the line, then, you know, the elongated strides don't necessarily help you when you're trying to catch up with, say, a very speedy, because, you know, let's face it, Smith's not necessarily a burner. So he's got to play within a defense. As far as the bandit philosophy for Khalil Mack, look, I agree. And we used to call it Joker, where you have him standing up and you see him. Get teams like Green Bay used to do it with Matthews, play around with it. You also have to have that ability, and I don't know if Khalil is. It's not necessarily a strength of his to drop back in coverage when he's not coming, to maybe dupe to where he's going to be and then have someone else come there. Overall, I think when it comes to this defensive front, I just think other guys need to win the one-on-one matchups. It's that simple. Whether it's Bruce Irvin or whether, you know, Danico Autry, Stacey McGee, someone else needs to win the one-on-one matchups, because if they're committing two guys to Khalil Mack, that means everyone else on that defensive line is one-on-one, or they're keeping Mack's protection. Somebody else has got to win, or the defense should have the advantage.
All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Go ahead, Doug.
I wanted to say to Link, you know, yeah. I'm getting a hell of an education here, and I appreciate that. So in basketball, sometimes you sacrifice certain things if someone's going to double team and different things like that. So in your mind, is that a way to actually use Khalil Mack, is let them double team him? Now that he's double teamed or they're chipping him off or whatever they're doing, now someone else, is that what you're saying? Someone else has to step up, because you have the ability. Since I'm taking two, you have the ability to make something else happen.
Certainly. That's exactly what I'm saying. I think that I know definitely that the year that Khalil Mack had last year, it put his name on the map. Now many people are treating him almost like Von Miller-esque, if you will. They're not going to allow him to just dominate a game rushing the quarterback. Teams like to throw the ball, so they're going to put their best man. They're going to try to wear him down with a double team. They're going to try to take him out to make sure he's not a factor in any given play. And that's why I believe other people have to win. The whole ideology about this defense, Doug, is that they want to be able to rush four and play combination coverage on the backside, whether they have to bracket or want to play zone or whatever it is they want to do on the backside with seven guys. They don't want to blitz a lot. Okay. They don't want to use it, but they've had to. They've had to adjust because they haven't got any pressure otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, early in the year, they were getting no pressure. They were getting no stops. The defense was giving up over 500 yards a game, and it was hard to win. So I think this offense can definitely strike on anybody, and I agree with the last caller who says they're playing to win and not necessarily lose, but there are some times in the second half where they sort of take their foot off the gas pedal, if you want, and don't have the momentum or not as equally as aggressive as they were, which sometimes costs them. But for the most part, when we're talking about Khalil Mack, how do you get him freed up? There's really no way to get him freed up. It's they've played around with the position, which is a little bit dangerous. I'm a little reluctant to put him over, say, a guard or a center, because I just know how mean-mugged those mean-spirited those guys can get, and how they might try to take him out.
Yeah.
And in the past, he's had some leg injuries, you know, hamstrings and stuff like that, which kind of works against him. But one of the strengths that I think we saw in – could be mistaken, I'm trying to jog my memory right now, I think it was the Baltimore game with the Ravens offensive line troubles that they had. They put
Khalil Stanley wasn't playing.
Exactly. They put Khalil at the three technique, and they had him, and I think it was either Danico or maybe Stacey McGee, run games together. And because Khalil is so powerful, he split the guard and tackle double team, And usually you don't have a back chipping up in the center of that because backs have the other responsibilities outside or inside gap. So that might be some way that they can utilize them a little bit more effectively.
Final segment on The Nation. We'll talk about the game coming up Sunday. The Chiefs, the Raiders. That's next here on The Nation. And by the way, don't be surprised if I miss that call in tomorrow morning as I'm in Vegas tonight. You know what I mean, Link? I mean, you know, I may not be able to do my Thursday morning segment. You know how that goes, Lincoln.
Hey, went in Vegas. Got to live it up, brother.
Hey, I'm getting too old for this. That's my problem.
Never,
Doug, you know,
there's no such thing as too old.
Agreed.
Oh, my gosh. Link, you mentioned the rivalry. I get that. This is a fierce rivalry. It goes back for a long time. But let's now speak specifically, getting ready for this game. What concerns you about the Chiefs?
Just Andy Reid has had an effective history against the Raiders when he was both in Philadelphia and, of course, what he's done in Kansas City. And the Raiders haven't beaten this team in three tries, so they need to get off the snide. It's going to be a difficult one. And of course, you never know how it's going to turn out. Such a bitter rivalry. The Chiefs have had our number for a long time. It's one of four only teams in the NFL the Raiders don't have a winning record against overall. So the records are thrown out. What else can you say? It's Chief Week.
That's
and,
right.
And as I said, there were many a times playing these guys twice a year where dropped some heartbreakers. I remember back in '97 when we got shut out by them. We came back, I think, not too long after that when we were really running. And we saw them at our place, and we had to put a shutout on them. So it's been back and forth entire history.
How does that feel drained, Link? I know it's supposed to rain all weekend.
Yeah, I know.
100% Friday, 90% Saturday. I know it's going to be covered, but we are talking about Oakland and showers on Sunday. Do you think that could be an issue in this game?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. Not surprise me at all. The fact is the field is below sea level, so it doesn't necessarily drain as well as you would like it to be. The saving factor is that it's going to be during the daytime, and hopefully the conditions are dry. If not, it could play a cost in it. But I mean, I remember some torrential downpours of playing this team. I just hope the Raiders are able to come out on top.
Well, when you say that, Link, usually when it's raining like that, passing doesn't really affect, no one's putting the ball in the air that much. So you got Washington and Rashard. And then over on KC side, you got Jamal Charles. They've only been averaging 90 yards a game rushing. What do you see? Who's going to win that rushing battle? Because that ultimately maybe could decide things.
Here's the way this thing is going to play out. Kansas City is going to come out with some sort of two-back system where they're going to try to power the Raiders defensively inside between the tackles. Then they're going to change up by using Alex Smith's mobility to run some bootlegs and try to drag their tight ends across the middle and in those out routes and to try to free up their tight ends. That's the best way that they're going to play it. Alex Smith's strength is a short to intermediate passing game. They don't really want him to stretch the field. They don't really like his accuracy beyond 15 yards. So they're going to play within that 15-yard mark. It's worked against Alex Smith at times, but it also has helped him, especially against the Raiders, because they really don't have an answer at the tight end. Yep. So if this game gets into a shootout, I favor the Raiders. If it gets into a shootout, I don't think it does. But if it gets into a shootout, I favor the Raiders. Where I'm concerned with is the inefficiencies at the run game. If it is a dredging downpour, I don't know how effective our run defense, our run offense can be against their defense, because notably they've got a pretty sound defense, especially on the inside. So it can be a give and take, and if the rain or the elements are in a favor, or not necessarily in favor but out of whack, it could be a low-scoring game, something like a 10-7 or a 10-9 type of game.
It's The Nation brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. Now, you talk about Kansas City, the intermediate passing game. They don't go vertical that much. We're talking about Travis Kelce, their tight end. And, again, guy's got 22 catches in four games, 220 yards, a couple of touchdowns. A big guy, 6'5", 260. And as you said, the Raiders have had difficulty with other teams' tight ends. This is going to be a big key, isn't it?
Kelce, Eifert, the big tall tight ends have really stuck it to the Raiders because they don't have a pure answer in the middle. Now, it might be different. Now that you got players like Carl Joseph and you saw, with Reggie Nelson and them playing, it might be different now. We'll have to wait and see. They haven't really gone up against, a big, lengthy tight end, though it did hurt him in the preseason. When they played Tennessee Titans, Delanie Walker was out. Another tall receiver who's a good pass-catching receiver. So, it could hurt him. It could definitely hurt him.
You know, when a lot of players play this down, Link, but when you go back to play your old team, you're geeked up. So should we see anything maybe special from Sean Smith this weekend?
It could be. I still think Sean has to earn his keep. I think he was down the first couple of weeks, especially the way where people were coming after him in the media. Mm-hmm. And yes, he's turned it around. He's playing a little bit better. But most importantly, when you're a free agent and you get a lot of money from a new team, you want to definitely prove not only to your old team, but of course your new team and all the fan base that you're worth it. And Doug, you know, because you've been in the area, you know how it is for Raider fans and Raider players. Mm-hmm. If they're worth a damn, they could have carte blanche. They could get anything they want. If they're not, they'll be talked about by guys like us on the media all the time.
Sure. Hey, amen. Link, have yourself a great weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're talking Raiders, Chiefs at home. We look forward to listening to you and Greg and Tom. Make it a good one. We'll chat with you next week.
Nate, I love you. Doug, welcome to the show. Take good care of Nate. Don't have too much fun down there in Vegas without me, guys, because I didn't get an invite. All right? I'm just saying.
And go Huskies.
Yeah,
that's right.
Huskies.
Go Dogs.
Yeah, watch those Huskies, baby.
Very true. You guys have a good one. I'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you. That is The Nation, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. Doug and I, we will be coming right back. Speaking of the Raiders, we're going to talk to someone in Las Vegas that is on top of the situation as it relates to a possible move to Vegas. We're going to do that when we come back right here on Sports 1140 KHTK.